One of them wanted to be the security guy. He claimed he was a security guy.
Jarvis, a little loud on those applause there, my friend. A little loud. I always happy to be back live in the studio. I'm not really sure what to expect, and that woke me up. Thank you very much. Welcome to another exciting adventures of Security Guy Radio, and let's get right into it today with my very special guest, Miss Nikki Birgit.
Close enough.
No, I got it wrong again. Say it.
Birgit.
Oh, see, I told you I get it wrong. I apologize.
No one gets it right.
We're going to talk about active shooter stuff today. I'm really excited about this because Nikki has the background in facilities first, right, before you went into security, which gives you a whole different perspective.
It does.
And so I thought we'll talk about, you know, the state of the business, what's going on right now. But let's talk about your background first. It's really an interesting background. Tell us how you got into all this.
So I was hired as a facilities manager. And, you know, it's always good when they say you're going to have one facility and then you start your first day and they go, just kidding, you're going to have four. And then a few months into that, then it's, oh, and you're going to do security too because we don't have anyone to do that. And it was in the middle of a build-out project in the beginning, which I love, and I love fixing problems. And once the build-out project was finished, then it became the mundane operations part. So I started looking for other ways. Where can I start improving? And it was security. We had no emergency action plan. In 60 years, they'd never run.
60 years, wow.
Never run a fire drill even.
What?
So, yes.
Oh, my God.
So we started putting, I started putting together the emergency action plan. I started putting in place security, safety and security councils for each building. So I had people that would oversee things even when I was not there. This accountability, really empowering the people within each facility. And once each portion of the emergency action plan got put into place, we would start running drills. And then you put all the drills in place. We have customer care. You have 10 minutes to run your drill because you can't pull people off the phones any longer than that. So there's all of these rigid restrictions. And if I can't comply with those, then they're going to shut down my program. And I didn't want that. And once I got everything into place, I was allowed lockdown. But when I started saying, I need active shooter, we have our parent company in the legal department going, whoa, whoa, wait, who is this girl and why is she still talking?
Now, I assume you didn't have a budget, really.
No,
they hadn't
had
a budget for security, right?
No budget.
And when you talk about an emergency action plan, you're referring to requirements.
Yes, OSHA requirements.
OSHA, mandate of OSHA.
Yes.
Oh, look who just walked in our studio. Miss Christina, come on in here. All right, we can get the two-shot. Miss Christina's a little bit late, but that's okay. We'll let her come in. You can join us as our co-host. Talk about active shooters. That traffic's brutal, isn't it?
Oh, my gosh.
Just get you all set up. You want your microphones?
Sure.
All right. So, Nikki came up through security.
Nice to meet you.
And come up close and get you all set up. Are we good on the camera there, Jarvis?
Yes.
All right, good. So she came up through facilities, which is different than, you know, the traditional, I'm a cop and I'm in security and I'm going up. So she just was handed facilities and then given security with no experience.
Oh, wow.
So we're talking about active shooters and emergency action plans. So an emergency action plan is a requirement of OSHA. So it's mandatory by law that you have this, right?
Yes. Now, if you have under 10 employees, it can be verbal. If you have 10 employees or more, it is absolute positive that it has to be written.
What would a verbal plan be?
I would say what we like to call that the GFO, which is the get the fuck out plan.
That's a good plan.
When you're saying, well, it needs to be verbal, it's in a lot of information that you're going to say is verbal. So when you're the head of security, you say, oh, hey, guys, when somebody comes in shooting, everybody run.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
We call that the GFO.
Well, that's a good way to describe it. It sticks in your brain, you remember,
right? It does.
So I was at Fox and Disney, and I had a facility role at Fox. And I came in as security, then I was given facilities. So I had to learn the other way around than you did. But we had a budget, and they said, you're going to spend this much money on it. And I was one of the first people that said, you know, this is tied to OSHA. And they said, what are you talking about? I said, OSHA can come in here and say, Christina, it's your department. And by the way, I'm writing you a ticket, and I'm going to put you in jail if you violate OSHA in a safety environment. And this happened when people on the set of X-Files got killed in a power line accident. They arrested the guy that was in charge of the set.
Wow.
So it's very serious, and nobody seems to tie actor-shooter into this OSHA thing to make it mandatory.
No, they don't. And what a lot of people don't understand is that within the general duty clause, there was an amendment made in 2011, and they used the term recognizable hazard. So in
that's interesting.
2000, which is pretty vague. A recognizable hazard in one industry may not be the same in another industry. But in 2012, there was a shooting at Accent Signage in Minneapolis, and this is Hennepin County. So they lost 5 employees, including the owner. And they had 2 families come back and sue them for this. Now, in the court of law, they were told, the court ruled, active shooter is a recognizable hazard.
So precedence
has been set, but so many people don't know that. And like what I'm also a reserve officer, and one thing that we love to say is ignorance of the law is not a reason to break it.
Exactly.
Or not an excuse to break it.
Well, tell that to one of our former presidential candidates. I had to get that in. Sorry. Sorry about that.
Good one.
All right. So here's what I can't get my head around. I teach actor-shooter training, too. Have you ever been involved in that actor-shooter
courses? Actually, I took a course, yep. I actually took one to be an instructor also. And because I was working in the schools. I worked at the college police for my first year before I became a cop
Monica.
So we took courses there for that, especially in the college. But when I became a police officer, a school police officer for Santa Monica PD, they had me go to the course, and I was working in all the different schools. But we had so many schools. And
you were on a long time.
Yeah, I was on.
So they were teaching this even back then?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
So, I mean, but the thing is they didn't start really implementing it until after like Columbine and all those shootings started happening.
Yeah.
But so when I was in the schools, we started really talking about it. But a lot of schools don't want to talk about it because they'd rather not scare the kids, you know, just like with suicide or anything else. They don't want to bring these things up. It's better not to talk about it. Just let it, you know,
The thing that I teach a lot, especially when it comes to running drills, is when you run a fire drill, do you chase people around with a blowtorch to scare them? Okay, so when you run an active shooter drill, it is not necessary to scare the hell out of people during it. This is active shooter drills are the new fire drills.
Yep, exactly.
They are mundane. They are calm. What you want them to remember is what to do, not how scared they were during the drill. And then you're doing it for recall.
I'm going to disagree with you a little bit.
Okay.
Here's why. Who's been shot at? You have.
Yes.
Big time. I know that, right? I have. You were actually hit. We know what that's like. I don't think the average person has any idea what it's like to be around a gun, to hear a gun, to know what a gun is. And I would part with you on that I think it's important to create a muscle memory and a simulation of what you might expect so you don't freeze deer in the headlights. Because if a real gun starts going off, I'm thinking you might go, oh, it's a real gun. What do I do? Academia works, but unless you actually put it in place and start running, then I know the first thing I'm going to do when I hear a shot is run. That's why I've never been hit, because I run my ass off, right? And because I was trained in the police academy. They put you on the range and they shoot blanks over you or whatever, and you learned it.
When you do reality-based training for law enforcement, military, it is absolutely mandatory that we get reality-based training. But when you're talking about an average civilian and you try to put them in that reality-based training, their response can't be the same because they don't live it. They don't live that same training. So we get base training, then we get reality-based training, we as in law enforcement. But when you talk about your average civilian, you are working in a cubicle and you spend your days there.
Right.
So when you are all of a sudden you're told, oh, we're going to run an active shooter drill and I'm not going to tell you when we're going to do it, well, you're already this heightened sense. You're already freaking out. I know it's coming. It's supposed to be a surprise. Now, I'm not focused on work. I'm not focused on anything. I'm just afraid. And I can say that because when I first went through reality-based training, I was scared shitless. I was like, I have no idea what this is going to be like. This is going to be horrible. It took several reality-based trainings for the training to really sink
in. No, that's true. That is true.
Because it was just fear. Well, you're not going to run. What we talked about this, 25,000 repetitions for something to become muscle memory. You're not going to run an active shooter drill 25,000 times.
But I will say, working in the schools, and we had big high schools in Santa Monica. We had the Santa Monica High School. If you keep doing things, at least when you do, even if you do it once, I mean, if you have something implemented, these kids are going to remember that, especially if they have that fear in them.
And I think schools, they're mandated that within the first 15 days of school, they have to run their active shooter. Yes. I've actually helped run them or monitor them, and I have to write the reports up afterwards.
It's mandatory for Cal State universities for incoming freshmen to do it.
I think it's important. I mean, I think that fear does implement something. I mean, once you start doing something, just like a fire drill or an earthquake drill, I mean, you're going to, you know, it's not happening at that moment. But for those kids, if they're going through something, at least they have some kind of training when something does happen.
Yes.
So they're not going to be like, dear, you know, in headlights. They're going to be like, okay, well, we had some kind of training. We know that, well, if a guy is in the hallway and we hear shooting, let's grab that door. Let's try to lock it. Let's try to make sure
That's what you want them doing. I mean, want them thinking.
Yes. And true. Now, you know what I use? I also use humor. So all my classes are funny, and I use Nerf guns. I don't use airsoft.
Yeah, oh, that's good.
So they remember, and I've given classes, you know, 6 years ago, and people come up to me and said, that was so funny, I remember that thing. And that sticks in their brain. So whatever gets to stick in the brain is the important part. If you can achieve it through peer academia,
I'm saying they need to run drills.
Right.
Yeah. I'm just saying don't go get airsoft guns. Don't scare the hell out of your people, because I don't think that they're going to memorize. They're going to remember it.
Well, what I found with the ALICE training was that it made me, and I already knew this, but the people that were civilian with me, it convinced them that they could survive it, because we proved it. I had a guy, I was playing a bad guy. One, I played a cop, one, I played a bad guy. And when the guy came in to shoot, I got into a stairwell that was a tower stairwell, a door in one side and out the other. So it went around a corner. It was like a pillar. And the guy would come shoot at me, and I'd duck in the hallway. And then he'd come in the door when I went out the other door and came behind him. I did that for 10 minutes. He could never shoot me. And he emptied all his bullets, and then I grabbed him and kicked his ass, right? So it proves that you can do other things if you don't have a gun.
Yeah.
So I don't want to dwell on that too long. I was not aware that you'd teach it without that, per se. But you have a good point about the muscle memory.
But again, it's culture.
Yeah, culture,
So I also teach to the culture of the business. I don't come in and try to change their culture. I will try to add and make sure that security is now part of it. But if I'm teaching a bunch of guys that are already all concealed carry guys, and they spend a lot of time, and the culture for the business is, this is what we do, and we're the ones that are going to be fighting back, then I would say absolutely do reality-based training, because I know that they can handle it.
Okay,
but when
you
have a very diverse company and very large and multiple small cultures within that, you have to be careful doing that. And as a consultant, if I walk in and go, oh yeah, this is what we're going to do, and I got airsoft guns, and we're going to do this, and they're going to go, oh no, we can't do that.
Yeah.
We can't do that. So I always teach to the culture of the business.
I think also, as long as you're in the very beginning, especially in schools or anything, actually businesses, because now it is businesses, it's not just the schools anymore, we're dealing with everywhere. You start talking about things, but if you start implementing those things in their head or getting it in their head, I mean, just even talking about it, like, or even asking them some different scenarios, like, what would you do in this scenario? What would you do in that scenario?
You call it the what if game.
Yes. And so let them kind of think of some things, because you're going to have the ones that are the doers and the ones that are the victims. You know, the ones that are going to get involved and the ones that are going to be like, oh, I want to run. But you're going to have those two types of people. So you're going to know in the classroom right away who are the ones that are going to want to step up, who are the ones that are not. But at the same time, when something happens and those bullets start flying, you don't know if that person's going to freeze or not. You don't know what's going
to
happen.
That's now, when I used to do this, my stats might be wrong in this, but when I used to teach this, the stats were that there's never been a kid killed in a fire in a school in 50 years. Right? Did you ever hear that stat?
I think I have heard that.
Yeah. I mean, but what do we fire drill since we're 5 years old?
An earthquake. California.
And nuclear bombs. My gray hair. We did nuclear drills. Oh, the Russians are going to blow us up. Get under your desk and hold your ass, right? And that didn't do anything, but it made everybody die peacefully. But they spend a lot of time and effort on that. And then you say, well, it's a gun. And they say, oh, no, we can't do that training. It makes no sense. And a fire drill is not the same training as active shooter at all. We're not going to march you out in a roll so you're ducks in a shooting gallery, right? I always train to the individual. So I want to train you and you to be individual advocates of your own safety. And if we all act independently, then we're acting as a group. And that's a better way. But the old model was, you're the hall monitor. Mm-hmm. You're going to tell a bunch of people they're screaming and scared to death what to do. That doesn't work. No. It doesn't work as a policeman, right? So let's talk about that approach. What do you focus on to make people aware in the training, to raise their awareness, and to get them to act appropriately?
Well, it's the what-if game, and as in law enforcement, they teach that to us. No matter where you are, because there's no guarantee I'm going to be at my desk or I'm going to be in the break room when this event happens. You could be anywhere. So take a few seconds every day and ask yourself, and it doesn't have to be out loud. You don't have to make a big production out of it, but just go, okay, if someone walked through that door right now, what would I do? What do I have? What are my weapons of opportunity? Where are all my exits? And to be able to answer that no matter where you are in that building. And then you expand out from that. What happens if it happens on my way to work? What happens if it's at my house? I mean, you think there was a shooting at the mall in, and I, It was a Silver City. It was Silver City Mall, and it actually started in a residential area. The guy wrecked his car and approached several different homes before he was allowed in. And he told the lady, I wrecked my car. I need to come in for help. He walked in, grabbed a knife, stabbed and killed her. She was, I believe, 80, stabbed her daughter, stole their car, went to the mall, Macy's. Unfortunately, they've gotten a really bad rap this year. Wow. Stabbed three people in the dressing room, went to a restaurant, stabbed some more people. But you don't know where it's going to happen. It can happen
right
at your house when you are being a good Samaritan and let somebody come in.
Exactly.
I think one thing that we fail on and not able to sell people on is that we call it active shooter. And that just makes people's brains go click. I don't want to hear about that. When in fact, there's much more violence at work all the time than shooters. It's boyfriend, girlfriend stuff. It's domestic violence.
Yep.
40% of active shooters have a domestic violence component. And I was telling Nikki before the show that I had a client in Ohio that had a 65% female workforce, which means they have a much higher appearance of possible domestic violence interaction. And the company did nothing with restraining orders until I got there and trained. Oh, no, I don't. We put them in the file. What do you mean you put them in the file? You're probably going to have a bigger incident, right? And what they didn't know is they actually had violence occurring because they didn't monitor those things where the boyfriend showed up, the boyfriend punched the girlfriend in the parking lot. Violence was going on around them, and they just didn't classify it as anything serious because it wasn't a gun. So little violence is the beginning of the big violence.
Exactly.
I'm probably going to punch you in the nose or yell and scream at you before I shoot you, if I'm mad at you. Right?
Well, the thing is everyone expects these restraining orders to be the end-all safe thing, and it's like it's a piece of paper.
It's not even Kevlar.
Yeah, exactly, right? It's not going to save you. And we have so many cases at court that happens where the guy ends up shooting or stabbing the woman in court, you know, while they're on the way or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
It's just sad. I mean, but you're right. It could be any situation. You in the store, in the movie theater, you know, in a hospital. I mean, you never know. I mean, Santa Monica had that shooting, the active shooter at the college, you know, and he was in three different places.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That actually occurred at my brother-in-law's old house, a block away from my mom's house. And I remember being at the hospital with my mom and looking on TV and saying, oh, my God, I know that house. And, oh, my gosh, it's on fire. And they have two dead bodies in there. I'm like, I guarantee you it's going to be the father and the brother. And it was. And he ended up basically shooting and killing them, ended up going and doing some other shooting at, on a bus, then went to the college, and then ended up shooting and killing him there at the library.
My daughter had just left the college with a friend.
Oh, my gosh.
5 minutes before that happened, right? So it touches everybody. There's somebody you know knows somebody that was involved in this kind of stuff.
Yep.
Now, what's the big resistance now with corporate America? I would think people would be lining up to pay you a bunch of money every day to do this.
One is denial. We don't want to admit that that can happen here. I don't say if it happens. It's when it happens. And the other one is money. You can't get – there's no ROI on security. And I get firms that tell me, you know, we budgeted money for that last year and nothing happened, so we're not going to waste money on it this year.
Well, I think the big cost that people – if I'm going to go in and sell something, I'm cheap. I'm $1,500 bucks a day, $2,000 a day plus expenses, right? That's not a lot of money. Mm-hmm. They spend that on breakfast every week, right? But if I got to put 50 people in those chairs at overtime, that is a huge cost, right? So how do you sell that return on investment to them? How do you explain? Because when I say it's an OSHA requirement, they roll their eyes and say, so OSHA, that's Band-Aids and first aid kits. I don't care about that. They really don't think it's serious.
Or I'll pay it. I'll pay the fine.
Yeah. Or I'll pay the fine. That's right.
I'll pay the fine.
That's right.
I had one company tell me I have good insurance. I don't care about active shooter. My insurance will cover all of it.
Well, then I would say your insurance is not going to cover when these families go after you civilly, even after that, and take your cover.
For
negligence, it's even worse than that.
Yeah.
You fail to mitigate, your insurance may not pay anything.
Exactly. Knowing that that's what you're hoping for. Yeah.
So I think one way to get through to people is to say, how would you phrase this? It's the right thing to do.
Well, everyone has their own due diligence. I mean, I think everyone needs to realize we should all be aware any place we're at all times. But no one nowadays, everyone's on this, on their phone. No one's looking around. I mean, you go in a restaurant nowadays, everyone's on their phone.
Right.
No one's looking at the front door. No one's looking at the place getting robbed. It probably could get robbed.
Situational awareness.
It's no one's doing that. And it's because of all the modern technology we have. So
give us an outline of your course. Like what you would... A brand new class. It's a bunch of civilians. I don't know anything about this. How do you start out?
Okay, so I cater to my clients, but I promote workplace violence prevention programs. And within that, you have your emergency action plan, and then you have all the elements of the emergency action plan. You have a workplace violence prevention policy. You have...
Got to start with that first, right? That drives it.
Yes. And a lot of companies will have one, but they haven't looked at it for years. And they slide it in front of your new employees, and then they let it go. Well, I'm a big advocate of creating a security-minded culture. And you have to do that because if your people aren't on board, mm-hmm. nothing you can pay all the money in the world and start an initiative, and it's going to fail because if your people don't support it, it's not – you've got nothing. You can put tons of money into physical security, badge entry doors, mm-hmm. and then you have your employees holding the doors open exactly. for other people.
Or keeping it open with some kind of little –
Yeah, well, it's hot. Like it's hot. We have to mm-hmm. we have to prop the door open. Or you have the beheader then in Moore, Oklahoma, who waited. Mm. They had badge entry. Yeah, they had badge entry, and he waited until shift change because he knew he could tailgate behind someone. And although he wasn't fired, he was suspended. HR has to keep that private, so we don't tell anybody. But your people need to know enough that just seeing him back in the parking lot is reason to call the police.
What's with Oklahoma? You guys have a lot of stuff going on up there. But it's a nice place. I've driven through it like 3 times this year.
Really?
Yeah, it's a nice place. And you got all these shootings, bombings, crazy stuff going on up there.
You're
it's weird.
Talking about the Oklahoma City bombing, too.
I know, all right? It's like, very interesting. Now, I always say to people, if you want something done in your company, you as the employee have to drive it. So if we're going to change our corporate, our country culture about security, it's not really going to come from the top because the top's going to say, here's a policy, here's a procedure, here's what you need to do. And people are going to go, right? But, I mean, this recent election is a recent example of that where people said, you know what, we're going to change it. And they got off and they did something about it. So do you find that enlisting the employee to drive it upwards is effective for
Absolutely.
A callback, let's say, right?
And it really has – you have a lot – you have your different layers. So your mid-management is actually a good – they're a good supporter.
They're not the decision maker, though. How do you get past
it? No, so they actually have to drive it. So what they do is they bring – they start telling all their people, hey, look, this is what we need. This is what we need. And I went and got information on it, and here's this person, and here's the company. And they'll go – I do a lot of presentations, do a lot of lunch and learns, and that's how I get in front of a lot of people. And they'll be like, you have to come out and talk to my people. So I'll come out. Now, I may not get to do an entire program all at once. The standard is, hey, we don't have active shooter and emergency action plan. Will you help us get it written? Yes. But here's all the other things that mm-hmm. you're still going to need. But I'll take it. If that's all you're going to give me, it is still a start. And I can still push. It's just convincing. And it's teaching people what it is that they're really going to need. It's not just a piece of paper. Yeah. You can't just have a policy and go, oh, no, we're compliant. See, look, we did this. But you don't train on it. You show it one time to new employees, but you don't reevaluate the program every year. And when you have workplace violence prevention programs, a big part of that is auditing it every year. What are we seeing? What's the change that we've seen in the last 10 years with active shooters? They stopped killing themselves, and they started shooting it out with cops.
Yep.
So that's why lockdown stopped working.
That's a good point.
I mean,
If you're not constantly reviewing, okay, so what was the latest incident? What happened? September for us was a bad month. I mean, I don't know. I have like a list of all of it. It was bad.
These are shootings just in September. Let's read it.
Yes. So we have
because all news is local mostly, right? Unless it's above how many 3 people are killed.
No, so it has to be 3.
It's not considered a mass shooting. By
3
the FBI.
Or more is a mass
That's
shooting.
Stupid. Stupid FBI.
So you have McMinn Plant in Athens, Tennessee, 2 dead and plus the gunman.
Wow.
Never heard of it.
I mean, neither.
Alpine High School, you had a 14-year-old girl that shot and killed another girl in the bathroom and then killed herself. Alpine, Texas.
Didn't hear that one.
The strip mall in Houston, 9 people were injured, and you had an attorney who was upset with the firm he worked for, went out to the strip mall really early in the morning and just started shooting people.
Really?
No one died.
Now, so
but you had 9 people that were injured.
Right, so the FBI did not classify that as an active shooter?
For
their stat purposes? I don't think so. I think
I'm
somebody
not sure.
Has...
You know that their report, the 160 active shooter events in this 14-year period, you know that if you read every one of those incidents, they weren't all 3 people. Some of them were 1 person that died.
It's very inconsistent.
And it's not. And I put together a report for churches because I started working with churches on theirs. And I started doing all this research. And what I did was I looked at, okay, so which one of my incidents are overlap with the FBI. I found there was not 160 incidents in that 14 years. There were a lot more.
Oh, no, there is.
Lot more. So it is not 160 events.
Yeah.
It is.
That's all politic nonsense, right?
True. But what you're looking at is you're looking at a study of 160 events. That's what you're looking
Better look at a study of 1,000. Paul and I did a show a couple years ago where I did research on this, and there were over 1,100 shootings, if you want to call somebody walking in, shooting, stepping, whatever you want to call it. The earliest, back in 17-something, 1700s, school shooting.
Wow.
Because the teacher had a little parakeet, and the teacher said, don't touch the parakeet. And so some kids had touched the parakeet, and the parakeet died. So the teacher beat the kid to death.
Oh, wow.
And then the dad came out and shot him with a musket and killed the teacher. It's a school shooting, right? I mean, this stuff's been going on a long time. It's you know, exacerbated not by the media and stuff. But this is the danger in the news. They're not giving us the right information. Not giving us. I mean, I didn't hear about those things.
No.
I'm a news junkie, and I did not hear about those, right? Give me some more. How many are we up to so far in September? Four so far?
Yes.
Okay, give me
some
more.
So then we have Cascades Mall, which was the one I talked about. This is Burlington, Washington.
I got relatives, so I heard about that one.
Okay, so then that was five dead. So that was the last one I have in September, but that's five.
And that's just here, because if you look at it and dig into the data, there's something in every country going around all the time. And I'm a little rusty on this, but if I remember correctly, what was the big event? Was it before 9/11 or after 9/11 or the day of? There was a school in China that everybody got chopped up with a machete, and China or Russia. And that just kind of went by the way, so I didn't hear about it because 9/11 was a bigger story.
Yeah, I can't remember that one at all.
So this is a problem, and why people don't think that it's necessary to train for it. It's just common sense. I don't know.
Well, it's a crapshoot. Is it really going to happen to us? Well, the chances are pretty low, so let's just pretend like it's never going to happen, and then we don't have to deal with it.
But a fire's never going to happen, and they spend money on fire stuff.
That's true.
Fires are very rare.
But fires aren't evil people, or fires aren't violent people. Fires just randomly happen. Active shooter events don't randomly happen. Now, you may have – it is either – it has built up and it was missed.
I agree with that.
People
yeah.
ignored it, or it's an outside act of violence and they have nothing to do with the building itself. They just go in and start
So I teach
people.
John Burns aggressive management, and that is a little different from the active shooter. Is that active shooter is responding, right? This is prevention. So if you start acting weird and sending my boss an email at work and say I wear pink underwear to get me in trouble, that's aggression. And if you keep doing that – and I get a pushback, it turns into violence, right? People like that training because I'm not talking about guns and I'm not saying there's a shooter. I'm saying you're going to identify this guy before he does that. That's the best thing to do. Now, do you incorporate any prevention? A lot of critics will say you can't prevent a shooter. And I say baloney, balderdash, nonsense. You can. What's your thought on that?
I think that you can. If it is, because there's multiple types of workplace violence. So when I do a workplace violence prevention course, we talk about the different types. And you talk about your customers. You talk about your coworkers. You talk about the domestic disputes. So now your coworker's family that's
right.
involved. Now, almost all of those you could see coming. The customer, it's usually going to be pretty quick. It's something that escalates depending on the type of customer. Is it somebody that's a check cashing place that just comes in and snaps right there? They've had a bad day. A lot of other people may have seen little indicators from that person, but by the time they reach that check cashing place, they're at their wit's end, and that's when they go. Those people aren't going to be you don't get to see all those indicators from that one person.
Yeah,
or like the Florida incident,
yeah.
The guy at the nightclub. I mean,
yes.
No one saw that coming.
Well, no, I disagree.
Oh, really?
I think when you get back into the forensics on that, we're going to find a couple of signs. Because almost all these that I've studied, there's a component where they tell somebody, they foreshadow it, they write a manifesto.
Did he say something?
He was picked on. I mean, I think he was conflicted, and that was part of the issue, right?
It's the people that are directly in have line of sight to him that yes. could have seen.
Yeah, and he had a few contacts.
Actually, his wife.
His wife thought
his wife
something.
Knew, yeah, she actually knew something ahead of time, and she could have prevented it.
And
yes.
he'd been to some
right,
other places,
right.
and he was had some arguments with
that's
people.
Right.
And this involves the intervention yeah. piece. So if I just say, hey, you're drifting away from my group, I want you to come back. Mm-hmm. Instead of saying, hey, F you, get out of here, and make the guy more angry, it takes a lot to try to get him back in. But that if I'm going to kill you, it's because I have no emotional connection to you.
Yeah.
And that's because I was your friend or I was your coworker, now I'm not. And that's the key. I mean, that's where you can recognize this drifting away part. So I'm not saying it's 100%, but you know what? It's 50%, and we could get 50% of them,
and
we're not.
If you can prevent one,
yeah, that's
you've
right.
still
Something,
been.
Yes.
Now,
that's right.
Here's one that very few people know about.
Okay.
I mean, have you guys ever heard of John Ledoux?
Never heard of John Ledoux. So Jarvis, ever heard of John Ledoux? Jarvis knows everything. That's why I always go to my man over there. No? Okay. If he hasn't heard it, you're going to impress him.
So John Ledoux, this is Waseca High School in Waseca, Minnesota.
I don't even know where that is. All right.
Now, what happened was John has this friend's parents rent him a storage unit. And he decides he's going to go to the storage unit one day, and he cuts through this girl's yard to do it. And I think she was probably 16 years old. She's watching this kid cut through her yard to go to the storage unit.
How old is this guy?
I want to say he was 15 or
a high school guy. Okay, all right.
Yeah, he is 15 to 17 is how old he was. And he cuts through the yard. She goes, okay, that's weird because people go to the storage unit all the time. They never cut through my yard. Gets there, unlocks it, opens the door, steps in and shuts the door behind him. She goes, okay, now that's two. Mm-hmm. People don't ever do that. They never shut themselves in there. There's something going on. She calls the police. Police show up. They open the garage door. He has bomb-making materials inside there. He has pressure cooker bombs. And at his house, he has a manifesto talking about how he's going to kill his parents, drive out to a secluded area, set a fire. When first responders respond to the fire, he will be at the high school with pressure cooker bombs that he has already planted there, blowing them up, killing as many people as he can, and going out in a blaze of glory with the SWAT officers. Now, the police show up. They get him. He had told them, he said, if I had been armed, I would have shot at you guys.
Wow.
John Ledoux just got out of prison. He just got out. Now, I don't know what his mental state is now.
He's 21. He can't go more than 21 if you're convicted as a juvenile. Do you know if he was convicted as a juvenile?
You know, that I don't know. Okay. I know that he pled guilty to some things, and then they dropped a bunch of the rest of it. And they had a hard time proving that he actually would have gone through with it, which is weird because I heard audio of him, the interview with him, and he said absolutely he was going to do it. So what'd your family ever do to you? Well, nothing, but I needed as many victims as I could get.
So he's just mentally unstable.
He was not right. But this girl saw something. She said something, and she not only saved all those people at the school, she actually saved this kid from himself. But no one knows about this.
I've never heard of that.
Yeah.
Again, if you see something,
this proves the point. That's
right. You see something, you have to say something. Now, whether or not that person's going to be arrested for their odd behavior, the Virginia Tech shooter, he went to the range, bought targets, but he laid them out on the ground and stood over top of him and shot him. They could.
There were 72 incidents where somebody could have intervened with Virginia Tech.
There's so many.
72 bizarre, weird. One was his two roommates that he killed. Thought it was kind of weird, just need to get laid. So they got him a hooker. And the hooker comes in and he pulls out a knife and starts pretending he's stabbing her and stabbing the ground and acting all wacky and scared her. She never reported it. Probably because she was a hooker.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, but still, I mean, I was on a date and the guy pulled the knife.
Exactly.
You know what? I mean, so intervention is a component. What that girl did was an intervention, unbeknownst to her. And so, again, it's all about people just identifying behaviors outside of norm and telling somebody about it. And maybe he'll come back and do it again, but that day he was stopped.
Well, that's what we tell all the kids at school, too. I mean, when I was a school officer, we constantly told them, whatever you see, report it, say something. No matter what it is, something very minute, but you feel that it's suspicious, let us know. Let us be the judge and let's determine if it's something okay or something nothing, or, you know, let us be that one to determine it, but say something.
Yeah, and you're like the reasonable person standard.
Reasonable, prudent person, right.
So would this be odd no matter who was doing it? Is the behavior itself odd?
Exactly.
Yes. Would someone else besides me find this behavior odd? Yes. If you can answer that, you should be reporting it. And don't worry about being called racist. Don't worry about San Bernardino. The neighbors of that couple failed to report them receiving crates at odd hours. They thought it was weird. They told the cops, we didn't report it because we didn't want to be racist.
Yeah. Well, I'm the crazy old white guy in Burbank that calls. Oh, it's Mr. Harold again, calling again. I'm calling him every week about something.
You know, I sat on
and it turns into things sometimes. Yeah. Right?
I sat on a plane and watched a guy with a cell phone, and he's holding it up, going like this before he ever took off. And I grabbed the stewardess and I said, "You take it away from him, or I will." And she goes, "Oh my gosh!" And she like went, made him erase it, told him that you can't do that. But I didn't have a problem, saying it. I had a problem letting him continue to do it because no one does that.
No.
That's not standard behavior.
No one wants to get involved. Nowadays, I feel like everyone is about taking care of themselves, doing their own thing in their little bubble until something happens and when it's too late. Well, it's like putting a Band-Aid on something.
Well, and sometimes something does happen, and what do? This is what they do the whole time. I'm going to get under the table, and I'm going to tweet about it.
Or videotape it.
Yeah. You know what? Unless that cell phone has an app that puts you in a bulletproof bubble, put it down, because it's not going to save your life. And your life is worth saving. Exactly. So don't sit there in fear and go, oh, my God, I'm going to die. No. Do something about it.
How do you like the run, hide, fight video? I love that video.
You know, I do, but if it's not trained the right way, then people think hide is the end all. So I can either run or I can hide or I can fight.
Well,
it's one.
Right.
But hiding, if you're going to hide, hide with the intent that when the situation changes, I better have a way out or I better have another plan.
Yep.
I'm not just going to hide and go, okay, well, I'm good with this. No, because the situation is very fluid. It can change, and your hiding spot may turn into you being a fish in a barrel.
But don't you think it's better than no training that we used to have?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yes. Absolutely.
And because nobody did run, hide, or fight before. They just did freeze. And that's why they all got shot. Literally, they weren't hiding. They were, you know, oh, I'm under a desk. That's not hiding.
No, I think run, hide, fight is good. But I'm just saying that you need to teach it the right way and make sure you hide with the intent of what's my next plan. Let me get here. Let me figure out what my next course of action is, because you're hiding under a cubicle, and you've, I'm sure, both watched the video from Columbine.
Yeah,
those kids hid.
Oh, the movie.
Yeah, they're victims.
Yeah.
Well, no,
yeah.
Actually, the actual footage.
Yeah, there's footage there.
Oh, a movie came out that was made about that right before 9/11. They never released it because of 9/11
connection. No, they actually showed it.
They have actual
footage. But they simulated it.
When
it was pretty interesting.
When I went to the instructor course, they showed
it. They showed it, yeah.
Yeah, that's very powerful. Yeah.
It's,
and those poor kids,
tough to watch.
They did exactly what they were trained to do. The teacher got him in the library. The teacher got him at the desk. You can hear on the phone because I got the actual dispatcher tape. Mm. Oh, he's outside the library door. Oh, there's a shot. And the exit door for the kids was, I don't know, 20, 30 feet away. And some kids started running out the door. And they used to get back and get under the desk. And they all died. But see, this goes to prove training. Because they all died, but they were trained perfectly to die. It's hard to say it that way.
Well, I think
that's what they're trained to do.
But I also think kids don't take it one step further. You know, they're used to taking orders from the teacher or taking orders from somebody. They're directed. Well, they need to realize they've got to make a decision by themselves without having someone direct them to do something. If you're in that situation, if the teacher's telling you to stay and you're telling yourself, hell, I'm not staying here. I'm going to get shot and killed if I stay here. Then you know what? Go run to the door. Don't listen to the teacher. Say, everyone come with me. Let's go.
And that actually, it starts in school, but then we go and work for a business.
Exactly.
Well, no, this is the protocol. And what is it? 12 minutes is the average response time for law?
It's about 12.
No, 12 minutes is the average what it is for an event, an actual event. So the average is 12 minutes. 18 is what it takes the average for law enforcement to respond.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what does that tell you? That means you have 18 minutes that you
something.
Are. Well, you definitely have 12, that it's just on you. And if you, well, no, they'll come, they'll save me. No one's going to save you.
And if you get shot, you're going to bleed out.
The steps you take in those 12 minutes are going to make or break your life.
Yep.
And empowering people, making sure that they understand that, really saying, it is your life. What you do in these 12 minutes matters.
Yep.
Here's what I do when I give it. I get the guy that hired me or whoever the head guy is to stand in front of the class and say, I want you to listen to this training, and we want you to do this training. And by the way, it's okay to break a window. It's okay to bust something furniture to get away. We studied cases where some guy got shot in a room, didn't die, and said, why don't you just break the window and get out? Oh, I get in trouble for I broke the window. Because that's their culture. They were trained not to break company property.
And
right?
What you do in training is what you do
that's
in training.
That's right.
Exactly. Because it's like also
got
you
race
a police officer.
Stuff.
You know,
right.
Your ammo, you used to pick it up all the time. Those kind of things. It's muscle memory.
So what – do you get hecklers in the classes sometimes? It's that's a bunch of crap. I usually get that from the cops and security guys because I think they know more than everybody else.
You know, I don't – and I don't deal with a lot with security. I do strictly businesses.
And I find that those people love this stuff.
They do. And when it comes to talking to officers, it's usually to help bridge the gap between our response and what they're looking at. And I play the advocate on both sides. I'm like, hey, guys, civilians, this is what you're looking at when law enforcement arrives. And, you know, they're not there to help you. They're not there to treat you. They're there to hunt that threat and stop it. And then they can tend to everything else. But everyone there is a threat. Everyone.
That's right.
Yep.
So you have concealed carry guys that are like, oh, no, the Rambo mentality, I do get that. Because you'll get guys that are like, oh, well, if that ever happened, I would, you know what, sit down before you hurt yourself. How often do you go to the range? Exactly. How often, how much training do you really have? You don't know what you're going to do. I love that you're sitting in my class and you're willing to learn. And that's what we're here to do.
Exactly. You young whippersnapper, you. She must get a lot of flack back from these old guys. That,
you know,
you're not a policeman like me. I don't know what you're talking about.
Exactly.
We were talking about this before the show. And I'll throw this question to you. I do what you do all the time. Danger, danger, danger. Oh, no danger. Good, danger, danger. You know, cops do that, right? Mm-hmm. We're always ready to jump and leap and do something. And I always think to myself, okay, if shit goes down right now, I got to shoot somebody. What do I do next? I don't have no problem busting a cap in your ass, right? The bigger problem is, do I put the gun back in my pocket and stand there? Do I put my hands up and wait for the police? What do I do? Because I'm the one who's going to get shot before somebody else gets shot.
Yeah, because you're not in uniform.
I'm not in uniform. It's who knows what it looks like. I struggle with that every day. And I'm really not sure what I'm going to do, except I'm not going to move. And I was just thinking to myself this today. I said, I would probably put my hands up. So if they shoot me, a good forensic guy could figure out my hands were raised through the bullet trajectory. At least I could do something about it, right?
So here's the really scary part about that. When you're in an active shooter event, you don't know how many shooters there are.
Exactly.
And just because you took out one,
it could be a friend and back.
Are you really going to put your gun down?
Yep.
Because I don't know that I could.
It's a tough call.
I think because you don't know that there's no more threats. What happens if you put your weapon down and then...
It's clear and present danger is the basis, but again, you don't know. Now, I just go on the numbers, and you know, most active shooters are solo. There's a couple, two. But it's a constant evaluation and struggle. I mean, what would you do? What do you have a protocol for after the shooting? Do you put it in your pocket? Do you stand there?
Funny. I've been in a shooting.
Call the cops. Okay. Well, what'd you do?
I actually.
Wait. Hold on a second. Just move over here a little bit.
Okay. Lightning. Okay. Actually, you know what? When the whole thing happened, it was so fast. Oh my gosh. It was at a friend's party. It was a graduation party. We were in Culver City, and next thing you know, we were leaving the party, and some 18th Street gang members were in the area, and they started basically pushing the guys we were with, who were wearing suits, asking them where they're from. The guys are like, we're not from anywhere. We're here for a graduation party. And all of a sudden, the guys kept pushing and pushing, basically trying to instigate something. I was wearing a dress, had my gun in my purse, and I'm like looking at this going, what the heck is going on? And I just got off the phone, and all of a sudden, I look, and I start walking over, and all of a sudden, I see the guy pushing the guy again, and I'm like, can I help you? The guy looks at me and goes, what's your effing business? It's none of your business, bitch. And I'm like, no, it is my business. I'm telling you right now, you guys got to leave because there's a police department right around the corner. And I can actually call the guys that are in uniform over here and they can take care of the problem. So then they look at me and they go, what's it to you? I'm like, I'm a cop. And I'm telling you right now, you guys got to leave. And all of a sudden they look at me and they saw my hand was in my purse and like, wasn't sure if I was a cop or not. I was dressed in heels and a dress. And so all of a sudden they're looking at me like, you know, F you, bitch. You know, we're going to come back with ours and we'll see who's tougher. So they take off running. My friend and I were like, okay, we're out of here. And the guys are like, we're out of here. And I'm like, we need to go tell everyone at the party. They're coming out with kids and everything else. We got to warn them just in case these guys come back. I'm on the phone with Culver City PD. All of a sudden the guy comes back. My friend, I'm on the phone. My friend's like, Christina, he's coming back. She, for some reason, takes the keys out of ignition. So now she's trying to put him back in. I'm like, oh, my God, forget it. I jump out of the car. I'm telling the guy, let me see your hands. Let me see your hands. He wouldn't let me see his hands. I already knew he said he was coming back with a gun, but I wasn't sure. Like,
oh, the same guy. Same guy.
Yeah, same guy. And I'm like, what the heck? You know, and I don't see the gun because his hand's under his Pendleton. Next thing I know, I'm telling him to freeze. He wouldn't stop. Next thing I know, he runs right past me. And I'm like, what the heck? Why is this guy running past me? He runs around the corner, runs around another corner. I'm now running after him. The phone had disconnected when this guy's already coming back. So Culver City knew he was back. So now I'm trying to keep my eyes on him. I'm running after him, not trying to catch him, but just keep my eyes on him. He turns a corner. When he turned that one corner, I had this bad feeling. I'm like, something doesn't feel right. Well, when I peek, he's now waiting at the very end, probably about 30 feet away from me, pointing the gun in my direction. I now yell, gun. Well, he shoots around. I had a 5-shot. I start shooting, but I look and I see the backdrop, everything, the whole, you know, thing you were trained. Yeah. Well, next thing you know, as soon as I lost my 5, I was like, okay, I'm done. I'm like, I'm not waiting for this guy to come back. And I thought I hit him, but I was a little 5-shot pea shooter. He takes off running. Police finally show up, but I had my gun, but I had my purse. So, like, you know, it was in my hand still.
Oh, in your hand? Okay.
Yeah, it was in my hand still. And as soon as the police show up, I'm like, hands up in the air, but I had my gun in my hand. But I'm like, hey, you know, I'm a police officer. And that's when the guy come up and they check me. And, you know, also they chase the guy because the guy comes back and they catch the guy. But, yeah.
Where did this happen in Culver City?
right near, you know where I think it was Sagebrush, or it's not Sagebrush anymore.
Sagebrush Cantina.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yep.
We used to go there all the time.
Yep. Long
Dang.
Time ago.
Well, I wasn't on duty. That's why I was unsafe, apparently.
Yeah, that's why you were a Cobra City officer.
Cobra City Cop, that's right. Now, this presents an interesting dilemma. Has anybody looked at forecasting what the next shooter environment is going to look like? Because my projection is a couple things. One, before we had this possible reform of Obamacare, Paul and I talked about, you know what? You double my premiums, you take away my insurance, I got terminal cancers, I'm taking the guys out. And we saw some evidence of people's going into hospitals and doing these things. I think that's going to go away. I am concerned now that concealed carry goes up in a lot of states. People have more concealed carries. They do think that they act out to intervene, and they think they're stopping a shooting. It actually creates a new shooting. Mm-hmm. And now we get a different dilemma. I mean, are we to differentiate as a civilian that's trained that this is a good guy and I have to act differently than from a bad guy? I don't think you can split those things. And it, by acting to try and fix it, you could be causing a bigger problem.
Yep.
I think it's going to be a new thing.
I hope not.
And I'm not talking about cops. Like, I mean, cops off duty try not to get involved because we're trained not to get involved, right, if we don't have to.
Yeah.
But an average guy might think he's a hero and, you know, that could
and
be.
And shoot the cop instead of the bad guy.
Yeah,
right.
it could be messy. And by the way, no letters. I'm all Second Amendment, so don't give me any crap and send me anything, all right? I'm just saying.
The shooting at the at Alpine High School, they had blue on blue there. And their problem was that they had, well, you have an active shooter event, you have multiple agencies show up.
That's right.
You have everybody, you have people self-deploying. Not everyone is on the same frequency. And that creates that, and for this incident, it actually created some major problems. And you had, I believe, a government agent that was shot. No, he didn't die, but he was injured.
Well, I think they have to implement something where, you know, like kind of New York, you know they have certain things that they do to kind of let you know that they're cops. I think same thing with us. I think if you're working in an agency or working with many agencies, something happens, you have to have some kind of protocol to let everyone know that person's a cop. To be aware that, you know, that look for something. I mean, I don't know what they're going to do, but you're right. It could become a serious situation.
And once we develop that, then the shooter's going to figure that out. And then it creates a hole. Because I'll tell you, if I was going to be an active shooter, the first thing I would do is be Omar Mateen. He should have put on the security. He was G4S security
guy. That's right.
He was. So all he had to do was put a security shirt on.
I know.
And, I mean, he was very successful at what he did.
Right.
Unfortunately. But these are things that I worry that we're going to start.
Well,
seeing.
I'll tell you one reason he was successful that, because I actually went to that club a couple months ago and I was in Florida, as is. It's a very small place. We're talking about
the Florida shooting.
What's it? Pulse?
Pulse. Yes, Pulse Nightclub.
Very small. I mean, it's smaller than this whole studio, not this one studio, but you know how big our studio is, right? It's not very big.
Wow.
And this is sardines. I mean, they really had no way out. I went around the back and there looked like there might have been a door there, but probably not. So these things contribute to these sort of things too, which comes down to active shooter training, which is know your exits, know how to get out, know what cover and conceal is, which every cop knows, right?
Know your weapons of opportunity.
Yes.
It's a bar.
Right.
How many bottles were there?
Because they're throwing them at him, you know, something.
Oh,
get a bunch of people.
It was so small, and I forgot how many people were there, but it was a lot. And I'm in my brain, I'm going, all they had to do as a group is move towards this guy and swarm him, and that would be all over. Maybe one or two people get killed.
Well, after 9/11, I mean, even in the airplane.
The airplane,
right. People are making a big difference. You see it more now in the airplanes.
You do. In the church, in the study that I did on churches, you wouldn't believe the number of shooters that have been taken down by the congregation.
Oh, that's interesting.
You look at the one in Charlotte where the guy went in and he killed 9 people in the church.
Oh,
in Charlotte.
Deemed psychotic today or something like that. Yeah.
So, you know, what he reloaded his weapon 5 times.
Wow.
5 times he reloaded. And they were so – and I'm not trying to armchair quarterback. I'm not. Mm-hmm. I have never been in an actual event. I can't even tell you for sure, even though I've been trained, that I know exactly what I would do in an event. So it's – I'm not saying that. But if we can learn from this, what is it? And it is – that is 5 opportunities – to take down the shooter.
Well, I spend a lot of time teaching people the physics of guns, all right? Guns are inherently inaccurate. Why do I know that? Well, because go down a range and try and hit the target in the bullseye by trying to aim, and you're going to miss it more than half the time. Cops only hit their target about 15% of the time in an active shooting situation because you're not going like this. You're going, whoa, and you're up and down, and you know, if you're not trained to point shoot,
or you're running. Or
you're running, but active shooters are successful 50 or 60% of the time because the victim's not moving. Mm-hmm. And this is why I differ from you on this part. I think the simulated training with the simulated guns lets people understand what trajectories are. With my Nerf gun class, I have somebody stand up in the audience and say, I want you to walk across the room, and I'm going to hit you. And I go pop, 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 and I shoot in front of them because I know how to, you know, how mm-hmm. to do that, right? And I hit the guy every time. And I'm not even – I'm point shooting. And they're going, how did you do that? I know how to shoot. But let me show you how you cannot get shot. And then I go serpentine, and I can't hit the guy, right? So if you teach people that guns are inherently not accurate, they're not as dangerous as you think you are, don't be afraid of them, be in control. To your point, after the guy dumps his clip, I'm all over this guy. And he's not going to be able to load faster than I can get there. And then I take my chances after that, you know. So do you find – do you teach any of those kind of components, the mechanics of guns and things like that?
I haven't yet, but I'm not a firearms instructor, and I think that that would make it better mm-hmm. when I start teaching it. It is something that I'm looking into doing. Yeah. But when you talk about the serpentine and stuff, you're still teaching the mechanics, but you're teaching without fear. You said you use humor, right?
I do use humor, yeah.
But you don't use outright fear.
No,
when
I don't.
You do this.
I want them to be educated and informed.
Okay, that's what I'm talking about. I don't want to use fear when I run drills. I don't want to use fear to teach because they will only recall that fear.
Okay, so what do you use to click the muscle memory in to make them remember the class?
So they have to.
Besides being charming.
Well, that helps a lot.
It does help a lot.
They're concentrating.
So really what it is it's just changing their mindset.
Okay.
And it's teaching them that mindset shift, which is not paranoia, it is simply a mindset shift. But it can't just be done in one class. That's why it's a security-minded culture. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, there's so many different aspects to what I do in the consulting side, and there's so many different levels in the company that I need to be talking to. So when I go in, I'm like, if you want me to do this, these are the people that have to be included at all times. I want operations. I want HR. I want one executive, because it has to be every level, and it has to come. It has to come from the top, because those people have to live it too. And mm-hmm. I've heard if we're going to do training, the executives don't have time for that.
They're the first ones that should get it.
They should have this. So no, we don't do. Well, can you do a shortened version because they don't have time? No, because if your people see you doing a shortened version, what does that tell them? They are not that important. They are not. Their lives are not that important to you, and you can't do that as an executive.
A cultural shift can be done. It's not easy all the time, but if we were going to change something at the studio and put in a new process, I gave it 3 to 6 months. I didn't get mad at anybody for 3 to 6 months. I didn't write anybody up for not doing it for 3 to 6 months. The people that stopped would not comply after 6 months. Let's go. They're just screwing around.
Well, and they're toxic because now
they're
backpedaling that initiative, and mm-hmm. you can't have that.
But I always got the buy-in from the top guy, and I would tell the top guy what the plan is. And if he liked it, when somebody came up from the bottom to push up on it, they'd push it back down and say, no. Mr. Murdoch carried his ID. Right? And if somebody sees the guy that runs the studio carrying his ID, you bet you're going to carry your ID.
You know, that was one of my biggest problems when I was working for the Fortune 500 company in Tulsa. And it was, I had one executive who said, I am not carrying my badge. You need to carry your badge. So we went round and round and round over this. And he was one of my favorite guys. He really was. But he was absolutely, we are not that kind of company. We don't do that. We're not going to be policed that way. Okay. And it would just constantly over and over and over again, we would talk through it. And eventually he carried his badge. But he saw all his people carrying their badge. And he can't be the one person mm-hmm. who's not supporting something when all of his people are already doing it.
So how do you get your foot in the door? Cold call, send a postcard. I mean, I think people would be calling you.
It is word of mouth.
Yeah, I'm guessing that doesn't happen.
Not always, no.
Yeah.
But doing my presentations, doing the lunch and learns are a big thing for me. So I do a lot of presentations, and that's really where I get my clients from.
Very interesting stuff. Mr. Jarvis, did you learn something again?
Always.
You always learn something.
You're watching that door, right?
Yeah, that's right. Any other war stories for us about, give me, this is not a right way to say it. I don't want to ask what your favorite shooting is, all right? But what's a shooting that stands out to you that we can really tell the viewers to go log in, Google this, and learn from it.
You know, it
Virginia
would be
Tech the, comes to my brain, but
it is. But you know, for me, it really was the Moore beheading, and that's because it impacted me directly. I was able to use it.
All right, so let's talk about that. I knew about that. A lot of people think probably don't know about it, or they say beheading. Well, that's just some isolated weird thing. But it was a very unique type of violence that I think is tied to something else. But.
So what happened was you have Alton Nolan, who works for Vaughn Foods. And Alton makes a remark to another employee that gets him in trouble. HR brings him in, managers bring him in, and they say, okay, we're going to suspend you. Now, they had badge access for their building. Their the CEO or COO of the company was actually a reserve officer for Oklahoma County. His name was Mark Vaughn. And they bring him – so they knew what – they had their security, and it was good security. You know, it was less than what it had been because they had sold out, a new company came in, they changed up a lot of things on the security. But they still had their emergency action plan. They ran drills for active shooter. So they suspend Alton. He goes home. He gets a kitchen knife. And I want you guys to really, like, picture this because this is something, like, you would buy from, like, a Walmart. It is a plastic-handled chef's knife. Puts it in his boot, drives back to Vaughn Foods, and he sits there and he waits until there's a shift change. And he tailgates and behind somebody else because he knows that he can do this. Now, you have all these people that have no idea that this guy has been suspended. They don't know. So
that's
confidential.
That's right.
Confidential. So they're just going to let him in. So he gets a hold of Colleen Hufford. And I believe she was a receptionist. And she fights him. But he successfully severs her head completely from her body. Now, you think about this. This is not a sharp... I mean, I don't know if you sharpened it before, but this is not... It's not a machete. This
is a kitchen
knife. I can't
even cut my
chicken
with these things. That's crazy.
So you have all these people doing what they're supposed to. I actually had the pleasure of speaking with Mark Vaughn about what happened.
By the way, why did they pick on her?
She was the first one that he encountered. Now, after her... Tracy Johnson, who was the one that got him suspended because the remarks were made to her, she reported it.
Right.
She steps out of the locker room directly in front of him. Now, he is covered in Colleen's blood, holding the knife, and she freezes. Mm. This is her fourth day on the job. Her fourth day. That's
oh boy.
It. She again, freeze. She can't move.
Well, wait a minute, though. They had drills.
They did, but 4 days in?
Oh, she wasn't
I don't
trained.
Know.
Mm.
I don't
not.
Know.
Yeah, okay.
So he gets a hold of her, and she survives. She has a big scar on one side. She did an amazing interview on Fox, I believe it was on Fox. But she talks about the incident. And Mark Vaughn, who's the reserve officer, goes out to his car, puts on his vest, grabs his patrol rifle, goes in and stops him from killing Tracy.
Yeah, you probably would have kept going. Mm-hmm. Man.
Yeah.
See, people don't know those details. That's amazing, isn't it? So it's, you know, if it's not a knife or a gun, it's a paper clip, it's going to be something. It's all violence. And the last thing we'll take before we go out is that if somebody commits an act of aggression against you in the workplace, you got to report it. You got to look at it as the first step in violence. Because if I'm at work and we're working together, that's a win-win. We work, we get a paycheck, mm-hmm. we go home, company survives. If I'm trying to sabotage your work and your job, I'm really trying to take money off your food off your table from your kids and stuff. That's violence. Think about it, right? What if you mm-hmm. don't get another job, right? All right, we got a minute, Jarvis? Okay.
I think, though, the businesses need to start telling, though, all the employees, when somebody's getting fired or released, or if there's some kind of bad circumstance.
If it's high risk,
yes.
There are more people that need to be notified.
It's getting better.
Exactly.
They
really are.
Mm-hmm. All right, give us your name again.
Nikki Burgett.
Give us your website. Now, listen carefully to this.
It is MJOLNIRCT.com.
And say the name without the CT.
Mjolnir Consulting and Tactics, and Mjolnir is Norse mythology, and it is Thor's hammer.
Thor's hammer. That's pretty cool, isn't it?
I like that.
And how we get a hold of you, Miss Christina?
You can go on Facebook under Christina Coria, or on my,
Twitter.
Twitter is Christina M. Coria, and that's it.
Excellent. Chuck Harrell, chuckharrell.com, securityguyradio.com. Tune in next week for another exciting episode. Mr. Jarvis, thanks for coming. I haven't seen you for a while, and I hope to be back. Oh, and by the way, new studio. Building a new studio right down the road here in the studio, UBN. My own office, sound room. We're going to try and go to 5 days a week. We'll still be with UBN, but we're getting ready to launch that pretty soon. And a show about policemen. So we got a lot of stuff coming on for 2017.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for coming. It's a great show. Very
thanks,
informative.
Nice.
Very
thank
interesting.
Thank you guys so much
thanks
for
again.
Having me.
We'll see you next time on Security Guy Radio. Good night. Thanks.